Welcome to Courtside Indiana Podcast, recording episode 138. I think 138. So high. You know, you don't know that you can count that high until you get to that point, right, Kyler?
That's right.
Never knew I could count to 138. There was a time I could do calculus in my head, but now I'm not sure that I can count to 138. But we weren't going to do a podcast this week. We were going to take a week off, and then the floodgates opened. Everybody started committing. Xavier Booker comes out with his top 10, which was the shortest top 10 in the history of recruiting. I that's kind of meant to be somewhat funny, but why do a top 10 when you're going to commit 3 days later?
It didn't make a whole lot of sense.
And I guess the inspiration hits you, you know, you make a decision. And this underscores the Trevor Lake situation a few years ago, when he committed to Indianapolis before finishing all his visits. And oh, by the way, didn't make his parents bad, didn't make him a liar. That's a soapbox I don't want to go down again, because it's going to open the Bellarmine fandom back up again. But, sometimes life changes, right? Circumstances change, especially recruiting and job hunting. If you get the job offer you want, you're going to take it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you get the scholarship you want, you're going to take it, right? So anyway, that's sort of a tangent. You're like, I don't want to get into that bull crap. I get it.
No, I love it. I love it.
I mean, you know, it is kind of funny. Here's my list of 10, and then boom, I commit 3 days later. Usually your list are the people you're going to take visits to or additional visits to. Whatever. But you know what? Kudos to Book. He woke up one day and decided he wanted to go to Michigan State, or that he didn't want to put it off anymore. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm just comparing it to a situation when a college coach actually had a problem with that. God forbid a kid should do what he wants without being dragged under the bus. So kudos to Book. That's the bottom line on that, is congratulations to Booker for committing to Michigan State. And we got more news, right? We really don't have a topic, do we? We're just going to talk about recruiting, right?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, there was a lot this past week.
This might be the shortest podcast ever.
I mean, it could be long, though. I mean, this was for a long time, I feel like this was the busiest week as far as in-state committing and, you know, offers and things like that I can remember in quite a long time.
It is, but unless Zach missed something, we really, it's still just four commits.
Right.
Anyway, let's get to it, including A.J. Dixon, who post-grad committed to – or no, not a post-grad. He committed to Eastern Florida for a junior college. Well, here's the recruiting update. Cannon Ketchens from Brownsburg, junior, picked up an offer from Xavier. Flory Badunga picked up offers from Indiana and Purdue. Of course, he's a junior at Kokomo. Joey Hart picked up an offer. Senior Linton picked up an offer from Western Kentucky. Clay Butler, a senior guard from Ben Davis, picked up an offer from Lincoln, which is a Division II school in Missouri. I touched on quickly the commitment of A.J. Dixon to Eastern Florida Junior College. He's a recent grad of Maryville. And then we had our four commitments. Marcus Burton, which was predictable once Notre Dame offered. That was closed up in short order. He committed to Notre Dame. Obviously, we've been sort of teasing the Booker situation. He's committed to Michigan State. Sam Orm from Carmel, the senior forward, committed to Belmont. And Dylan Moles, the senior guard from Greenfield Central, committed to Marion. I almost said he was from Marion, but he's from Greenfield, committed to Marion. Booker stuff. So you cover IU for Rivals, so you might have a different perspective on this. And I'd understand if there's things you can't say because you don't want to, you know, violate any type of reporting that you had, you know, done, or however you came to your information. But it's been a long time since anybody thought he was going to go to, you know, any other school besides Michigan State, right?
Yeah.
Say that, right? He was going to go to, we've all kind of known.
Yeah, they made him probably their top priority of the 2023 class for Michigan State. I mean, I'm going back all the way to like the end of the high school season this past year and in the sectionals and things like that. I mean, Tom Izzo and his staff were always at Xavier Booker's games anytime I was there. I mean, the one that really like kind of just, kind of took me back a little bit was when I was covering the Big Ten tournament, and then it was that Saturday that IU had lost, so I went up to Southport for the regionals, and Tom Izzo was there, who just, I mean, just a few hours ago was, coaching a Big Ten team in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, yeah, so
That's a short
right then and
trip.
there, do what?
It was a short drive.
Yes, a short drive. But just the fact that he would, take his after his team got beat in the Big Ten tournament, he would come see them. I mean, showed a lot what they thought of Booker and everything. And then like, right there, you kind of thought, I mean, it was gonna be Michigan State, but IU made a little bit of a push, and there was a few schools like Auburn and Purdue maybe, Notre Dame was in there, Michigan. They kind of made a push, during that time, during the summer and stuff. IU seemingly made a late, a later push, but towards the end of that, they kind of backed off just a little bit again. He had taken multiple visits to IU throughout, last season. I think he took one at the beginning of summer, but I mean, Michigan State made him a priority, and it's just a place where I think Booker felt comfortable with. And Tom Izzo kind of sold the fact that you can be a stretch four, kind of like Jaren Jackson, playing that role. So I mean, congrats to Xavier Booker. Like you said, Michigan State seems like it's going to be, probably the best fit for him.
Yeah, it's still to me. I mean, to me, it's still kind of an odd fit, though. That's the thing. I think there's going to be. He's really going to have to up the intensity level. It's going to have to be consistent. It's going to have to be more consistent than what he shows at times. And look, it's there are times where you where kids. Well, I mean, that's not even kids. There's times at any level, the NBA, even the NBA level, where players do exactly what's necessary to compete versus, basically exposing everything they can do on a court, on the court, maximizing their potential and maximizing their effort. And look, for sometimes it, now this goes straight to the kid situation. Sometimes it's about physical maturation. Sometimes it's about just, mental maturation, maturation in general. But he's going to really have to improve his core. I mean, every kid has to get college, get stronger to play in college, but he's going to have to really improve his core. He's going to have to really improve his footwork and who he can guard. And these are things we've been touching on off and on as his recruiting process has gone. And it's meant to be constructive criticism, but at the same time, those are things that he's going to have to do to just survive in the Big Ten, let alone produce in the Big Ten. And it's he's got a unique body type that he's going to have to vastly improve, especially especially his core to be super competitive. And it's I compare it to Isaiah Jackson for the Pacers. People are talking about how he might be able to be the starting center for the Pacers, and they can get rid of Turner. And you watched him in the summer league. Every time he's touched, he buckles. And he's a he's a superior athlete, but every time he's touched, he's buckled, and he buckles, and it impacts everything he does. And I don't know that it's a perfect, it's not necessarily meant to be a one-to-one correlation, but it is sort of the same mindset that I'm looking at, that how is a kid like that, because you've seen a lot of kids like that with his body type struggle at in college, just because it is. You've got to have that core strength to be able to handle the contact, to be able to handle the change of directions that you're going to have to go through, the change of speeds. Everything starts with your core. Speaking of someone who has a very weak core,
Same.
who's probably never had a strong core. I know these things. I speak from ex no, I do speak from experience. I've always been very slow, but he's it's just a different body type even compared to Flory Badunga, who's got a lower center of gravity. He's got a very strong and developed core, part of his body, and he's quicker into all of his movements, even at a grade younger. So that's it's and it's you think of guys that have gone to Michigan State. They've all been sort of intense type A personalities, and the one exception might be Jaren Jackson. Jaren Jackson was a little bit more laid back. He was kind of a later developer at Park Tudor. Of course, he played with blew it. Trayvon blew it. So he really wasn't seen as the team go-to guy till his junior year. And then, of course, his senior year, he spent that at La Lumiere. So I don't know that it's a great comparison to Jaren Jackson, just because Jaren Jackson was a thicker, wider player. Mm-hmm. They definitely have the same height-ish, same-ish height. Both have incredible length. And Jaren was a guy that could play face in the basket and kind of does. I mean, still does at the NBA level, even though he doesn't rebound very well at the NBA level. I'm not entirely sure he rebounded well at Michigan State, but I'm trying to look that up right now. For some reason, I can't dig up. There we go. Finally. He averaged just under 6 rebounds a game, just under 11 points a game, 21, 22 minutes per game. It's not horrible. And I guess the key factor there for Jaren was it in 21 minutes per game or 22 minutes per game, he averaged 1.5 offensive rebounds per game. That's a big number right there. That's you're looking at just around 2 offensive rebounds a game. And that's a good number for any, at any level. Of course the blocks too were off the chain there for him at Michigan State, 3 blocks a game. But he's seen as a developing player. He did shoot well at Michigan State, not at a huge volume. And if Book can be that, then great. I think Jaren's more physically developed and has a better frame. So that to me is what I'm looking for when I see a kid that's going to end up competing physically in the Big Ten.
Yeah. And another thing that kind of concerns me a little bit, playing in the Big Ten, is Booker's motor. That's always been a question. At the Big Ten, having a low motor is not acceptable. Whether you're on Northwestern or Michigan State, it's not acceptable in that league, which that he's just going to kind of have to learn to get out of that. And I saw him with a better motor, this summer a little bit, especially towards the end of the high school season when he got in the sectionals and things. I thought he did a much better job there. And I also don't really think he's going to be playing too much in the post. On the offensive end, I think that's probably a big thing from him, is to play mostly on the wing. And I think that Tom Izzo kind of wants him to play in the wing a little bit more. On the defensive end, he's going to have to get stronger. He's a great shot blocker. But you're playing up against, beasts in the Big Ten. You're playing up against guys that just want to, pound the ball inside, and they want to, finish through contact. Booker, in order to compete in that end, he's going to have to add some size, and he's going to have to add some strength, or else he's just not going to have a successful career at Michigan State, in my opinion.
Yeah, and being a shot blocker does not necessarily mean one is a great rim protector. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but it's why a player, you look, again, I go back to NBA comparisons. That's just because that's where we have the most stats. We have the most types of, breakdown of stats. Otherwise, Hassan Whiteside would have been an all-star every year. Because he continually rebounded well and blocked shots, but again, it was the things he gave up. Like, he would completely sell out to block shots, and that's a person who's hunting stats. And I'm not accusing Booker of doing that. He's 17 years old. He doesn't probably know the difference between what that even is. I would imagine a lot of high school kids hunt stats. I know a lot of high school parents hunt stats. So, it's one of those things where I remember when Michael Williams was a point guard for the Pacers, and he was continually one of the league leaders in steals, and everybody thought he was a great defensive player. And the reality was, he was a terrible defensive player. He was probably one of the worst in the Big Ten. One of the worst in the NBA, but he was small. He was smaller, not necessarily short. He was 6'1". Maybe 6'2", but he was thin and could be picked on defensively, and you could score on him easily. And sure, he would gamble, and 1.8 times a game he would get a steal, and the other 4 or 5 times he would do that, he would give up angles, he would give up shots, he would create defensive breakdowns elsewhere, and those Pacer teams weren't built to be the most competitive teams at the time, but. That was a guy that probably felt that's what he had to do to stay on the court. So, But there is a difference between blocking shots and being a really good rim protector. We talked about it today. You know, as disciplined as Badunga is, to me, he's truly a rim protector. Like you shoot a lower percentage when he's in the game. And the matchup between those two in June, I thought showed a stark difference between the two ideas of one being a shot blocker versus one being a great rim protector. And that's something that Booker's going to have to learn to do and do so in Michigan State system. Now, one thing that he will have to his advantage is if he is the second big, so to speak, is this perimeter big defensively, he won't have the same responsibilities. He will have a different set of responsibilities. He will not necessarily be the only rim protector on the floor. But again, he will also have to be able to show that he can guard the perimeter, that he can get through screens. That's going to be one. That'll be the real challenge, is if he plays somebody that comes off screens and how he handles that, because he's going to have to get that lanky body through that contact. He's going to have to get low and get through and recover in a position to where he can contest not just the shot, but contest the drive. So it remains to be seen if any of these guys can do that, let alone just him. I mean, that's a
Right.
question mark. I mean, Marcus Burton is going to have the same issues. Defensively, how is he going to do in the Big Ten? Or how is he going to do in the ACC? I mean, he's going to be small. He's going to be able, he probably will get his hands on some balls, but at the same time, is will there be any opportunities for teams to kind of bully him physically with bigger guards? And I know it's not, they're not in the same conference, but like Xavier Johnson for Indiana, I don't think he would look at Marcus Burton in ball screen action and be the least bit concerned.
Right.
And those are just the things you look at when you talk about a kid going to a high major versus a kid going to a mid-major. I think that the context of the discussion changes, you know, and just like Sam Orme going to Belmont, absolute steal for Belmont, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, absolute steal. You know, it's a much more positive, glowing conversation. I'm smiling, I'm upbeat, I'm like physically gesturing. You can't see it, but Kyler can. And you know, if he would have gotten snagged a couple of high major offers late and committed there, the discussion would have been a little bit different. It would have been about what the challenges he would have to face as what would he guard, you know? He goes to Belmont, he goes to the OVC, he can guard the three and the four at that level. And if he were to get switched onto a five somehow, or onto a, you know, or onto a lower, you know, a two, he would probably be able to hold his own through that rotation. But you know, again, going to Belmont, that's a steal. That's a great get for them.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised when I saw that. Not necessarily the school that he chose, Belmont, but just I wasn't expecting his commitment so soon.
Yeah,
And he
I agree
is
with that
and he
part
is
for sure.
yeah and he is a and he is a guy that, I mean, obviously he looked at all of his options and he found what best fit for him, and obviously that was Belmont. I mean, he's an incredible player. He's gonna have a big year at Carmel, I believe, and absolute steal for Belmont. I mean, Sam Orme could have gone to a high major. I wouldn't say easily, but I mean, pretty close. I mean, even IU was looking at him just a little bit. I mean, there was no offer there or anything, but they always kept tabs on him. That's just kind of a bigger wing, shooter. But Belmont got an absolute steal there, and I mean, Sam Orme's going to be set up for a great college career there.
Yeah, and his one high major offer was to Butler in the fall, but that's a new coaching staff. I don't know where
Right.
things were with Coach Mata on board. You know, his other offers were Indiana State, Western Michigan, Elon, Toledo, Loyola, Miami of Ohio, and then of course Belmont. So I was surprised. I guess I'd be anxious to know how heavily Loyola was involved. Didn't really get a chance to see Sam that much during the open periods, but he was I thought Loyola's obviously been very successful lately, and I thought that would have been an interesting get. And I, you know, we Carmelites love them some Chicago action. So if they don't come home, that's usually where they end up. Like professionally, it seems like that. You know, that's and then coming up in the rear, so to speak. Dylan Moles commits to Marion. Now, the interesting twist there, and I'm not going to reveal all the information, or just I don't think all of it's final yet, is Marion is recruiting him, recruiting everybody at this point as if they're going to be a Division I school. They're in the process of transferring, or to transferring is probably the wrong word, but to ascending up to the NCAA Division I level. Part of that process is an application pro well, it was some sort of assessment process, which I think went well. And then there's an application process, which I think they could have done this past July, but we're probably going to do it next July. So they would be targeting being a Division I school for the 2024-25 season. So that would be this current classes, this like Moles' sophomore year, Marion would be a Division I school. And part of doing that is having an agreement with a conference. And that's the part that isn't to be necessarily reported yet, because I don't think they have, I think they feel fairly comfortable that they have a conference agreement, but I, you know, which one it is, definitely don't want to be on the record as a non-participant. I'll wait till they say something officially, but I mean, you could take some natural guesses. It's probably going to be something, you know, near around the Midwest, that would value having the Indianapolis market in their conference, but they that conference affiliation is an important aspect of going to the Division I level. So they're recruiting these guys. You know, they're after Jake Davis. Let's see. I'm gonna go back here real quick and look at some of the colleges. What are some of the offers Marion has out right now? They've got offers to Moles. They've got offers to Spencer White, Jared Bonds. They've got offers to Jake Davis, and then that's it for the 2023 class. So unless we've missed something, for Indiana kids, that is. I don't know about other. I don't know about other places. So, I mean, I think Moles. I think Moles is a low D1 kid. I think he could play at that level. I think he has performed better than some of the kids that already have offers. I speak that unobjectively. The kid that played for me, for sure, to disclose that. I like to disclose that whenever we talk about guys, but I've also seen it. I've also seen what he did during the school season. I saw a lot of what he did in June and how he played against other school teams. And then, of course, he was really good in Atlanta and really good in Milwaukee. And really struggled in April. All of our guys struggled in April offensively. Defensively, I thought we were really good in April, but offensively, well, I'm not sure we could have thrown it in the ocean if we were stranded in a boat. But we got a lot of it. We got a lot better. A little bit started hitting shots in May, and that continued on through July. So, anything else on that list? Anything about Moles or Burton or?
Just talking about the commits.
Yeah, I mean, anything else stick out there?
I mean, Marcus Burton, what I was gonna say earlier was unlike Xavier Booker, obviously they're two different players, but unlike Xavier Booker, Burton can, he has time to develop there and, get used to that, ACC high major level, I believe. I don't think he'll be thrown in the fire right away. Unlike Xavier Booker. I mean, Xavier Booker's gonna have to learn on the fly. Pretty much, which he has the talent to, succeed or expectations there. But Marcus Burton, he can take time, he can adjust, he can get, stronger. Obviously, he probably won't grow a whole lot, but he can get adjusted fairly well. By his sophomore, junior year, he should be a great piece for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, Booker moves in. He'll come in behind Carson Cooper, Jackson Kohler, two players I know nothing about, out of state guys. And I really don't know, Mady Sisco. I don't know what he did last year.
I know
He's
they do lose a lot from last year, if I remember correctly. But I'm curious to see if they throw Booker as a starter right away.
right. They just offered Garrick Norman from Texas, who we shut down. We had one year every time we played somebody, he went off on us. They got an offer from Louisville. It was Ray Spalding Ray Spalding and Donovan Mitchell, back to back weeks. It's like, hey,
oh,
great.
Wow.
thanks for playing. They go out and have great games against us, and the next thing you know, Louisville's offering them, and it's like,
you're just a Louisville magnet.
glad we could help. Mitchell was having one of his playoff games, and I said, thank God we weren't the only team that can't guard him. I'm looking at Michigan State's offer list here on verbal commits, and I'm seeing a name that makes me feel really old. Jason Richardson Jr.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Christmas. His father, of course, had a great career at Michigan State and continued that on to have a really good NBA career as well. So,
yes.
Let's see. I'm checking something for Notre Dame too. What Burton's walking into as far as depth chart wise. I mean, he'd be behind JJ Starling. That's a really good pickup for them. I know that much.
Yep.
Alex Wade's a walk on. Cormac Ryan, I don't know. He was a redshirt. I don't know much about him. Looks like they've got, so he's got a little bit ahead of him. Anybody else they recruit at the wings would fill some of those gaps too, but they've got some Notre Dame will have some spots to fill as well. But yeah, he could he probably will probably still be competing with playing time with JJ Starling, at least for his first year. I don't know if Starling projects as a player who would leave early or not.
Not entirely sure on that either.
Yeah. Well, we didn't really have anything else, did we? We tried to come up with a topic. We weren't going to do anything this week. And then, like I said, all these commits happened and felt like we couldn't just go by and not do it. So,
right. And it'll probably be double the number by next week.
Yeah, it might be. 2023 is such a deep class. At the end of it all, we're going to have a lot of kids committing. I'm still anxious to see, because I still think there's – we'll probably have an episode here where we talk about under-recruited kids. Under-recruited, and, you know, we'll focus on guys that don't have Division I offers, but we may also throw in some guys there that are under-recruited. I mean, that would have been Jake Davis up until about 2 weeks ago, right? He would have
– yeah.
He might be sliding off that list a little bit in terms of the under-recruitment part, but he was a kid that for a long while – it felt like he should have been getting more attention. So getting through COVID, I'm moving down to a new class next year and be happy to go through a normal recruiting process. Still have to deal with the transfer portal. Yeah, exactly. Still have to deal with the transfer portal being what it is now, but I'm looking forward to a full recruiting process, and these kids in the class of 2025 are going to benefit from it, because a lot of these kids are getting early attention, and as they should, especially Sisley and Harrelson, who are both taking visits to IU and Purdue this week.
Yep. Jalen Harrelson took his today. He's unofficial. And then tomorrow, Trent Sisley's at IU. They're kind of swapping. Sisley was at Purdue today, and then Harrelson will be at Purdue tomorrow.
And they could have gone together.
I know. I originally thought that they were when I was on Jim Coyle's show today. Someone corrected me on that. They are kind of doing the switching it up. Obviously a Purdue and Indiana visit was guaranteed by both of them and stuff. So, those are two high priorities in the state, especially for Indiana. I mean, I think, IU, Purdue, and a lot of other schools, I think, are going to recruit them as a package deal. So it'll be, curious to see what they do at that next level, if they are going to stay together or they're going to go their separate ways.
I mean, they definitely could play together. I mean, they're definitely different positions. It'd be interesting to see if Sisley grows like his brother, gets to be as big as his brother. He's not too far behind right now. But it changes things if he's 6'9". I don't know. To me, he still looks like he's closer to 6'7", which isn't that, I do think that 6'9" is a magic number, though, especially with his skill set. He would be a load at 6'9", because he would definitely be big enough to play the four spot at a high major program. All right, man. Well, unless you got anything else, I think we'll just wrap it up. I mean, really, we didn't have much going on, did we?
No, not a whole lot. I mean, we had a whole lot, but at the same time, not a whole lot. It's kind of a weird loop.
Nothing on the tap until this, till the last couple of days. So,
yeah.
All right, Kyler. Well, appreciate you hopping on. Yeah, we'll get this up later this evening, and people will have it bright and shiny new tomorrow morning.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, bud. Appreciate it.